Hey guys, DJ here. This is a disclaimer. Apply Materials is a 100% non-profit fan project set within the Orpheus Protocol game system. The Orpheus Protocol is an actual play podcast and tabletop role-playing game system created by Rob Stith and published by Varkalek Press. If you'd like to know more, please check out the podcast at www.orpheusprotocol.com and patreon.com/orpheusprotocol if you'd like to show more support for the main show. A link to the main show will be provided in the episode description down below. Thank you for your time, and please enjoy the following episode. Welcome to Applied Materials, an Orpheus Protocol actual play podcast. My name is DJ, and I will be your host for tonight. On the cast list for our journey into the unknown, Dave as Eugene Cardenas, Rasp as Rion Daniels, Vario as Ayesha Said, Jenna as Annie Sullivan. Tonight's episode, Snatch and Grab, Part 5. Snatch and Grab contains violence, implied threats of violence against children, weird coincidences, and a tread of a new path. Consider this your warning. Previously on Applied Materials, Zenith Squad, trapped in the wreckage of their van, find themselves at a crossroads. Jacob chooses defiance and escapes, while Rion and Ayesha choose acceptance and surrender. Rion saves the life of Charlie, and the group return to Beaver. Meanwhile, Eugene does battle with the bear and is victorious, but finds that it was a shapeshifter instead of a beast. Troubled by his discovery, he is given no time to ruminate when Sergeant Samuel Langley requests his presence at the local police station. All right, so last we left off, Annie, Ayesha, and Rion were heading back to the town of Beaver, Utah, most of you being worse for wear because of a certain car crash that occurred, while Eugene was on his way to the Beaver County Sheriff's Department office to meet with Sergeant Samuel. Since you've been divided into two groups, essentially, we are going to start off with Ayesha and Eugene. Ayesha, you are in the back of Sergeant Samuel Langley's squad car. He is driving back into Beaver. Next to you is Susan and her daughter Kim. And as Sam pulls into the parking lot of the police station, Eugene, that's what you see. You see a police car show up coming down the street. It pulls into the parking lot of the police station and out steps this kind of beefy, not very tall, but slightly taller than you, guy with a cowboy hat on. He looks like he is middle-age-ish. And with him are three women, two adults, and one child. As all of them step out of the car, the dude sees you and he motions for you to go to, well, the police station so that you can go inside and talk in private.
Eugene will follow somewhat warily, not because he doesn't trust these people, because he's like, this is a lot more people than I expected. Sorry, wait, are any of these people, you said car crash, are any of these people the people I recognize from the car I astral projected into?
Oh yeah, you recognize all of them. You recognize the woman with the long hair, you recognize the kid, and you recognize the other woman in tactical armor.
In that case, Eugene's jaw drops and he pauses before following in very confusedly.
Ayesha, you see this young man sort of stroll across the street. You see he's got a bow strung across his chest for some reason, and he is following you into the police department. So the group of you end up in this quaint little office space. There isn't cubicles so much as there is just one big open space with a couple of desks and computers. Sam motions for any of you to take a seat if you want. And then he sits on the edge of one of the tables and he says, well, that was a right clusterfuck we got yourselves into. Mind telling me what this is all about now that we've got a moment to breathe?
Is this directed at me or Eugene?
Both.
I think Eugene, like, cocks an eyebrow. He's like, I'm sorry? I don't know exactly. I came to talk about a bear?
Yeah. Yeah, that bear that's been like, eating the people in this town over the past couple of days. I heard from some of my patrol officers that you killed it.
Yes, I did. That's the truth.
Well, that would explain why they were tending to some big black blob on the side of the road when we passed them earlier. Okay, fair enough. And then Samuel turns to you, Aisha, and he says, and mind telling me what you were doing trying to kidnap Susan and her kid here?
Well, I worked for, and by worked for, I mean worked for until literally, like, less than an hour ago. I worked for Blacksteel, and I was operating a mission for them to kidnap the family, to put pressure on one of their enemy's agents. Me and one of my cellmates are a little bit more attuned to the horrific circumstance that we were placed into without really our knowing. So we decided to, at the earliest convenience, which just happened to be the van getting shot off the road, abandon our mission.
Eugene, this is all news to you.
Absolutely. Yeah, Eugene's eyes are wide. He is honestly, like, not so discreetly under the table pinching himself to see if this is a dream. I'm sorry, did you say you kidnapped some people?
Yes, unfortunately. It was not exactly what I was hoping we would have to do, but you don't really get to decide things when you work for someone like Blacksteel.
Blacksteel, is that like, are you a supervillain?
I guess I was in this situation. And she laughs, but she doesn't look happy about it.
And Eugene looks to the officer like, don't get me wrong, I've done some weird stuff. She's a supervillain? And you just seem to be cool with that?
Samuel shrugs, and he says, well, I've dealt with far worse. You new in town, kid?
Yeah, I'm just passing through.
Yeah, well, you probably heard about the guy in our police force that was killing people, so, you know.
I mean, yeah, but I feel like there's a difference between serial killer and works for a shadowy, and he like puts his fingers in air quotes, agency?
Yeah, well, that shadowy agency, as you put it, may be closer than you think. And Samuel sort of shrugs again.
Aisha looks at Samuel and looks at Eugene, because how old is Eugene? Does he look like he's like 20-something? Or
he's 20-something. He's in his mid-20s.
Aisha looks at Samuel and looks at Eugene and is like, I suppose I also don't really understand. Is he supposed to help us against the cleanup squad?
Cleanup squad?
Oh, perhaps I shouldn't have said that. Yes. Me and anyone who was witness to the incident is in a lot of danger right now.
Eugene kind of deflates into a sigh. And Eugene, like, grabs his bow and whispers into it, what did you get us into?
Is this audible?
I think it is. I think it is.
Yeah, Aisha, you just watched this kid sort of mumble something into his bow.
Aisha gives Samuel a pointed look like, really?
Samuel sighs, and Eugene, he affixes you with a look, and he says, kid, that bow is magic, isn't it?
Eugene looks a little taken aback and then remembers the interaction he had with the officer earlier and knows there's no point denying it. Yeah, I generally know that magic exists, but what does that have to do with anything?
Yeah, well, it's good enough. As of right now, I am deputizing you into the Beaver County Sheriff's Department. You are going to help me and help us make sure no one else in this town dies.
Okay, I'm on board with that. Sorry, can I just ask one other question? I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name. What was it again?
Aisha.
Aisha, my name's Eugene. Pleasure to meet you. And he offers a hand to shake.
She takes it.
as they're shaking, Eugene just says, she kidnapped someone and worked for a shadowy, and he does the finger quotes again, agency. Why are we working together? Are we the bad guys?
Samuel gives the both of you a look, and he says, well, when one shadowy government organization meets another, when two titans clash, you know, stuff happens, people get hurt. Let's try to minimize the collateral here, though, okay?
Okay, that I can definitely work with. And Eugene straightens up a little bit.
Samuel looks at you, Aisha, and he says, how much can you tell me about these cleanup crews? Aisha, as you dive into your memories of the Black Steel Cleaning Division, I would like you to roll me a horror check, please.
Yeah, that makes sense. She's like, oh yeah, getting kidnapped and forced into working for this organization, nothing will go. Oh no! All right. Well, we're starting off great, and by great I mean terrible, because that's a -2 on the dice. So let's try that reroll. That's a -3. Love it. Oh my god, we are winning. Okay, so discipline. I have rank 5, so I'm replacing that with a +2. And that would put me at a 6, so I'm probably good.
You pass, standing to take 5 preventable clarity damage, and I need you to roll me a temporary insanity check.
Jesus Christ, these dice are going flying. Okay, that is a +1, so yay. And then I'm going to spend some strain to bring that down. 2 strain, take 1.
All right, yeah. Disinformation is bad, really bad. For you and for everyone else in this town.
So, what we have coming at us are 2 separate groups that are going to be trying to make this all go away. We have one that's trying to come in pretty much what you expect from a cleanup crew in a paramilitary organization. They're coming to destroy the physical records. They're coming to kill people. This alone would be pretty bad, but we also have a group coming after our memories and minds to make sure that we don't remember this. Or I guess, in my case, the people who are not exactly directly related, because I am certainly going to die if they succeed. But anyone tangentially related is going to be subject to memory, let's just say, disfiguration.
Well, it seems like we've got our work cut out for us. Okay, so we know who's coming. Do we know where they are?
They knew where I was 10 minutes ago, so I think they may be able to find the correct path to us, unfortunately.
Well, I've heard better.
It's not a great situation, and I apologize for involving you in this. Frankly, this is in none of our best interests. And for as much responsibility as I can take, I would like to apologize to you and the family who I decided to go along with the capturing of, despite knowing it was very much the wrong thing to do.
Susan, she places a hand on your shoulder, Aisha, and she says, I mean, it's not technically your fault. You were just following orders, right?
Yes, and I'm well enough aware to know that just following orders is not a good excuse.
Your friend saved my child's life. You know, I owe him a great deal. Actually, speaking of, they've gone to the hospital, right? Samuel nods, and he says, yeah, my pal Annie was driving them to the hospital last I saw. Given that we left at about the same time, I think they're there right now. Cut to Annie, Rion, and the small boy, Charlie. Annie, you've been driving back into Beaver, and instead of going to the police station, you made a beeline straight for your local hospital. You called ahead to your friend in the coroner's department and gotten Dr. Rose to call ahead to the ER department to tell them they've got a casualty coming in, a small child, and another man who was injured involved in a car crash, as it were. And so your car pulls up outside the hospital at the ER entrance, where there are a couple of nurses and a stretcher waiting for you. one of the nurses kind of hustles over to you and knocks on your window, and he says, "Is that the kid?"
Oh, here's the thing. I don't think Annie's in the proper, like, headspace to even, like, talk to people properly. Like, I guarantee you, that entire car ride there was just silent, white-knuckling the wheel. So, instead, Annie will get out of the car, like, being cognizant of the nurse right by the window, but getting out of the car and opening up the back seat herself, presenting said small child.
The guy kind of wordlessly nods, and you see him motion to his team. They bring over the gurney, and they slowly, carefully lift Charlie's body from the backseat of the car. He's still unconscious, but he's breathing at least. Rion, you know that that was your doing.
Yeah, and Rion's going to relay what knowledge he has. Pulse rate, that he's cognizant.
The nurse nods as he takes down all of the information you're relaying to him. And then as his buddies are wheeling Charlie away, he gives you a once-over and he says, "What about you? I heard you were involved in a car crash. You okay? You feeling okay?"
"Oh, yeah. Like, unluckiest thing, there was a damn fool left a pistol in the glove box. It went off, and Rion reaches into his hoodie and pulls out his copy of Solomon Kane with a frou-in-frou hole. "Shame, I don't think there's anything to be done for the novel." Tucks it back in the hoodie pocket.
A moment goes by. The nurse just sort of stares at you, dumbstruck. And then he says, "Did it hit you?"
"Just the hoodie. I'm fine."
Well, all right then. Are you related to the boy at all? Family, friend?"
"No, I have medical training. Officer Ann there thought it'd be best if I rode along rather than wait for the bus. Keep the kid stable and get him here fast, right?"
The nurse nods and turns to you, Annie. And he says, "Well, I'm glad the lot of you were here fast. We'll take care of the boy. I suppose I'll get in touch with the police if I want to give people updates. I guess they'll give us the family's contact details or something. You two have a nice night." And then he sort of turns around and jogs back into the hospital to go and tend to Charlie, leaving the two of you out in the cold winter air. What do you do?
Okay, question. Are there, like, not really stragglers, but other nurses that aren't tending to Charlie that are near the, like, intake emergency bay?
Yeah, there's one. There's another guy. He is writing down all of this stuff on a clipboard. You can see that the different color of his collar indicates that he is of some higher rank than the others that were tending to the kid. Probably the one in charge of, like, the shift that morning.
Gotcha. Okay. So I'm going to approach him very quickly and hand him my car keys.
The guy sort of pauses upon hearing you approach, gives you a questioning look, and then yelps in surprise as you just shove the car keys into his chest.
Yeah, and then she'll look him dead in the eyes. "I would ask that you keep an eye on my dog. I have a prisoner I need to detain." And then she'll walk back to Rion, grab him with surprising gentleness. She knows that he's injured, but she's going to grab him, and she's going to drag him inside the hospital.
All right. That he should be. And now I'm not shot, but I'm still a little tender.
Where are you taking him, Annie?
To Dr. Nguyen's office.
All right. Rion, the policewoman grabs you with a surprising amount of care and frog marches you into the hospital and down into the basement where the morgue is, apparently. Annie, as you're walking down into the morgue, you can see that Dr. Nguyen is at the door. She's holding it open, and she sees you frog marching this dude down the stairs, and she sort of folds her arms and gives you a slightly reproachful look, and she says, "Again?"
"This one's different, Rose. But yes, again."
"I would remind you it's rude to speak of a party present in the third person."
She's just going to shoot him a look, like, the most stern, like, he probably recognizes it, because of, you know, cyborg eyes, but just, "You will shut up" type look. That's not what she says, but that's all that comes through in her eyes.
The funny part is he gets that look from Aisha more.
Annie, you bundle Rion into the morgue. Rose closes the door behind you and locks it, and she rests her back on the door, arms still folded, and she gestures to Rion, and she says, "And so how different is this, Annie?"
She will give Rion the up and down, and then look back to Dr. Nguyen. Well, he lacks the witch part for sure.
Rose raises an eyebrow and she says, so he's kind of like your old partner, but not?
Well, I am made of stern stuff, so to speak. May I explain myself?
Hun, you're fine. Annie's walks me through worse.
Well, in disarming my former co-conspirator, I wound up shot. Fortunately, being shot is not as great a problem for me as others, and by dumb luck, he mostly got my novel. Well, Rian reaches into the hoodie, digs out a flattened bullet tip. Wouldn't you know it? Just lucky enough.
Rose walks forward and takes the bullet. She sees on your hoodie where you got shot, looks down at the bullet, looks up at you, and she says, honestly, that's not as surprising as I thought it would be, but I should still check you at least for broken ribs or something. When you breathe in, does it hurt?
Only relatively.
Like a sharp pain, dull pain?
Dull pain. More bruised than anything, I think.
Yeah, fair enough. She tosses the bullet to you, Annie, and she goes back into her office and sort of comes out a moment later with two cups of water. She hands one to you, Annie. She hands the other to Rian. And then she resumes leaning on the door, and she says, so what's this all about, Annie? You come in here with an injured kid and a guy who'd been in a car crash and shot, and he's fine, except for some bruising. What's going on, Annie?
There's unfortunately more going on than I have time to explain.
The long and the short of it is, Miss Anne needs to keep an eye on the boy.
Annie would notice the, like, tense silence, because I feel like that is a common tactic used by Rose to make Annie talk, is just being quiet, and Annie has the need to fill the silence, and so she would just stare for a little longer. If you find it important to know, Doctor, is that this man is a kidnapper, and I had to save those he kidnapped because they were under my watch. And she will glare daggers into Rian.
Rian pops his neck, settles. I will mind you, we're on the same side at the moment. While I have not always been on the angel's side, I intend to see to keep my promise to that boy's mother. I don't blame you if you don't trust me. I wouldn't either.
Rose raises a hand and she says, okay, question. If he's the kidnapper, but, like, he did something for the kid upstairs that, like, his mom or something, like, forgave him or something, I think that's what's going on, but, like, if that's the case, then why are the two of you down here? Like, shouldn't you be back at the police station?
Because should it come to the worst, Miss Anne wishes to make it easy to contain me.
She is going to choose not to correct him.
It's what I'd have done. The long and the short was, I promised Miss Susan no harm would come to her or her kin. That having happened, I intend to see that it is minimum harm.
There was certainly minimal harm when I saw those officers outside of my home executed.
That would be Jacob's doing. That was not the plan. I would offer my condolences, though I fear they would fall hollow.
And then Annie was going to look at Rose with a look of, this is why I didn't want to tell you.
There's this look of pain and disgust and shame on Rian's face.
I would like the two of you to roll me an awareness check with your perception.
Oh boy. Okay, that's going to be flat on the dice, and perception's just a one, so positive one.
Let's see. We got two. Don't have awareness, but I can only spend one, and I'm a goner. So we're coming at it with a six.
Annie, this slips by your notice, unfortunately. But Rian, though you are in the basement in a locked room, the morgue is quiet save for the hum of the air conditioning down here, which is very cold. With your enhanced senses, past the walls of the morgue, you hear sounds of a scuffle upstairs.
Miss Anne, I don't mean to arouse suspicions, but I believe there's a scuffle upstairs, and that may be the team we talked about.
All right, she's going to look at Rose with a determined look. I leave him in your care then. And then she takes off. Full sprint.
All right. Annie, you leave the morgue. You sprint upstairs. And as you emerge into the main lobby, I'd like you to roll me a horror check, please.
God damn it. All right. Shit. Sick of these horror checks, DJ. Okay. All right. Plus one on the dice. Gonna do this ability with willpower, so that's a 4. And I'm gonna need to use some strain. So I'm gonna pop 2 strain on that to bring me to a 6.
You pass, standing to take 3 preventable sanity damage, as when you emerge in the main lobby, you see a gas masked figure clad in all black. They have on what appears to be some sort of chamé or hood on top of a rather ornate looking, kind of old school gas mask. And this person has just completely obliterated the nurse that you were talking to, turned the man into a bloody smear on the floor.
Well, damn, I'm glad I took fatalism. Shit. And he's just standing there?
He's just standing there, yeah. And the sound of your footsteps coming up the stairs makes him slowly turn his head towards you. And then you see a hand go up to the radio clipped on his vest, grabs it, clicks the radio in, and you hear the man say,
"Primary target located. Moving to secure."
Roll for initiative.
Oh, primary target, my ass. No way.
Bring the werewolf along for combat. It'll make it a lot easier.
Werewolf can come up when he's ready. Oh, boy. All right, well, flat on the dice, but I've got a 7 in initiative.
I have, a 7 in initiative and a 1 on the dice. So, 8.
All right. Unfortunately, Rion, it is your turn. You are in the morgue. You just watched the policewoman run at speed out the door. You could hear her footsteps go up the stairs and then stop. There is an unnatural tension in the air. You can sense it. You can smell it.
Smell of blood.
The smell of blood and the smell of incoming violence. You recognize this feeling. It's not something that you would particularly enjoy. And I would like you to roll me a horror check as well, at the realization of just who you're going to be going up against.
Right. Well, I'm gonna take my discipline leave off because that was blood. Okay, that's slightly less blood. Let's see, running die. And come at it with a 5.
You pass, standing to take 5 preventable sanity damage, and I would like you to roll me a temporary insanity check, please.
+2.
All right, you're fine. But boy, oh boy, does this spell bad news for Annie and whoever else is upstairs.
Miss Rose, I do believe Miss Anne will need my assistance.
She gives you a look, looks upstairs, looks back at you, shrugs and unlocks the door to the morgue and gestures at the door with her hand and she says, "Well, I'll just lock the door behind you, I guess. Funnier things have happened lately."
Good luck to you and keep your head down, miss. And just like that, Rion's off like a shot. Go for the dead travel fast. So I assume it counts as an area away. This might be overkill.
Rion, you appear right next to Annie. Annie, there is an onrush of wind from down the stairs, and all of a sudden, Rion is just there, like right next to you. Quick as a blink. Rion, you stare at the dude in the gas mask in front of you, and your blood runs cold. You recognize this man, at least in passing. You know that in Black Steel, the cleaning division is separated into 2 halves, and you were offered a position on one half of that division called Hades.
Mm.
And you were briefly introduced to some of their operatives. This is one of their more feared agents. Ex-military, lots of combat experience, and a powerful mind. The man standing in front of you is Azrael.
Oh, hell.
And you know that he has a partner in Hades. Rion, you know that Azrael never travels alone, and that his partner, an equally dangerous man, is lurking somewhere around here.
There's a second. Keep your eyes open.
Annie, it's your turn.
Oh, man. Yeah, the nice thing about being a cop, you only have to warn somebody if they haven't hurt anyone yet. All right, next question. Who else is in this hospital corridor? I would hope no one.
The hospital corridor is empty.
Oh, thank fuck. All right. Yeah, no, it's arm cannon time.
Woo, Mega Buster.
Yes, I'm going to fire the projectile, and I am going to make this a called shot, but I'm going to use my enhanced optical targeting B mastery to negate the penalty, and I'm going to take that called shot right to the gas mask.
Okay, make me that ranged attack.
Yeah, like specifically the front respirator portion of his gas mask. I don't care.
Oh, Lord, John, that's just cruel.
Remember, your called shot will be at a -2 because it is a called shot.
Yes, and that's why I said I'm using the enhanced targeting B mastery to negate the -2 penalty. And I will instantly delete this man. Thank you. Oh, of course it's flat on the dice, but... So that is a +2, but I am going to be spending... Let's dump it. I want him gone. So I'm bringing it up to an 8, if that's the case.
Oh, mama.
I don't care, man. I've got the conviction of justice.
Annie, take a memento mori. Remove all of your strain bonuses.
Oh, fuck.
Fine.
Oh, no.
Very well. I take this memento mori, and it's only a 2 then.
From the heart of hell, I stab at thee.
Annie, you raise your arm and fire off 2 shots from your integrated weapon. But you see the man in front of you, almost as if he had anticipated that you would do this, cocks his head to the side, and both of those projectiles just whiz harmlessly by, barely even grazing the fabric of his hood. Annie, you hear the man in the gas mask scoff audibly, and the 2 lenses tinted blood red locks eyes with you. I would like you to make me a stability with willpower check or discipline with focus.
Okay, let's do... Oh, it doesn't really matter. I'm going to do discipline with focus then. Oh, no! All right, so that's a -2 on the dice, but my focus is a 3, so that'll bump it up to a +1. And then I've got a B rank discipline. Yeah, I'm going to put 2 drain into that just to bring it to a 3. It's not a lot, but it's what I got.
All right. Annie, you fail. The moment this figure locks eyes with you, you stare into the blood-red lenses of the gas mask, and you can feel yourself slowly drifting away, like compulsion to do anything, really, falls to a flat 0. And it feels like your mind is moving through molasses. As you lose 4 initiative.
Ugh. All right.
Rion, Azrael does this to Annie. You can see that the moment the 2 of them lock eyes, Annie just goes limp, standing there still like a statue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you hear the other set of footsteps come around the corner.
Oh boy. About to be a full rich day for Rion.
Another black clad figure approaches you from around a corner, and over the sound of boots on linoleum, you can hear a low growl that you recognize as similar to your own. This figure, also clad in tactical gear, all black, is also wearing a gas mask, but funnily enough, this gas mask is shaped the same way as the face of a dog, complete with 2 ears poking out from the hood. This you recognize as Azrael's partner, Anubis.
Ah, great. This is going to be a fun day. Well, my best move here is to ramp into full transformation.
It's not your turn. It's his.
Oh, Joey! That keeps it interesting.
And so, as Anubis approaches the scene, the werewolf under the gas mask locks eyes with you, Rion, and it lunges at you. So I would like you to set me a melee defense, please.
Go! Do I do the stupid and parry? That will kill my initiatavo. I think I feel like punching a werewolf in the snoot.
Well, unfortunately, you're not on the same initiative cell, so it's not a clash. So you're going to have to defend for me, please.
Go dodge. Oh, hello, Chorus. Precious little stain to put into that. So we're going to come at it with a whopping 6.
Would you like to spend a strain to break the tie?
Yes, I would.
Okay. Anubis lunges at you, Rion, and you can see that his fingers have grown deadly sharp claws underneath his gloves. And he takes a swipe at you, which would have taken off your whole damn head, but you duck underneath it just in time. And now it's your turn.
I think it's time to kick partial transformation rank 2 in, because that's my best move. I don't have the strain to spend down the damn cost, but that's what I got. It's a whopping 6 initiatavo. Transformation's awesome, but it is costly.
All right. As Anubis skids past you, his boots squeaking on the linoleum floor, Rion, you transform. You get a few inches taller. You grow claws. You get fangs.
There's this chuckle that turns into a hyena's. Goes from a chuckle to a shriek.
And Anubis responds in kind with a loud series of barks, muffled by the gas mask, as Werewolf recognizes Werewolf. And unfortunately, it's his turn again. Having missed one attack, Rion, Anubis is going to lunge at you again. So set me another melee defense.
Okay. I don't have the initiative to spend very now. +2. I'm going to blow strain. And come at it with a 6.
Ooh, I'm sorry. That is 1 degree of failure. So that is 5/4 physical damage, because he's actually at rank 3 and not rank 2. I need to roll another d3 for extra damage. So you're taking 7/4 physical damage.
Oof, I will burn free humanity to double my armor from a cursed resilience. And up it to 12 for this turn.
All right. So Anubis swipes at your chest, Rion, and you instinctually bring your arms up to block the blow, and your cursed strength and sheer grit. Although Anubis's claws tear into your forearms, causing gouts of blood to just gush onto the floor, you can tell that it's just a flesh wound, this, and you can keep fighting, because as painful as it is now, those claws didn't actually open up your chest.
If I drop, Annie's next.
Rion, as you're busy tangling with Anubis, you don't quite see it, but out of the corner of your eye, Azrael raises his hand at you. And I would like you to make me a discipline with focus or stability with willpower check.
Okay, discipline it is. It's -1 of the dice. Fortunately, I have plenty of mental strain left. I'm going to dump 3 into D's and come at it with a 5.
Would you like to spend a strain to break the tie?
Yes, I would.
All right. You feel a wave of intense energy crash over you like a tsunami in your mind as Azrael fires off this shockwave of psychic energy at you. But you weather the storm, and you can see Azrael's head just tilt to the side ever so slightly, almost as if he's curious that his attack didn't work.
Yeah, probably been a while since he's met somebody that can put up a fight.
Anubis, seeing that his assault against you hasn't worked, Rion, is now instead going to turn his attention to someone else.
Fuck.
Annie, I would like you to set me a melee defense, please, but before you do that, I'd like you to roll me a daze check.
A daze check? Oh, man.
At -2.
Ugh, all right. My dice have not been good to me tonight. Okay, +1.
But you're at a -2, so that rolls out to a -1.
Ugh, yeah.
So you are dazed. Annie, you don't know what sort of mental fugue state you're in, but the next thing you know, there is this other gas-masked person that looks uncannily like a dog or some form of canine animal, swiping at you with his claws. You're still shaking off the effects of whatever spell or compulsion that the previous guy had put you under, and so you are struggling to defend yourself.
Hey, DJ. Stupid question.
What's up?
Can I overspend to guard?
You can overspend. You'll just be at a -1 to your initiative next go-around.
I'm okay with that. I have to give some contrast to the audience for the Goodest Boy contest with Max.
Okay, so the only problem with me parrying, as much as I want to, I only have 1 initiative point. So I think I'm going to have to overspend too.
Yep, we're going into debt.
Oh boy, going into debt. But yes, I would like to parry. She's a fighter. Oh, thank God. All right. I got a +2 on the dice. I've got my 4 in Paris out of 6, and I will absolutely be spending that one bit of physical strain that I can to boost that to a 7.
Oh my God, you make it.
God damn.
This werewolf hurts.
Annie, you come out of it at just the right time. Your enhanced optics catch this guy's claws just screaming in at you at inhuman speed, and you raise your metal arm to parry the blow, knocking his hand away with a flick of your wrist. And you can tell that this dog gas masked person is surprised by how fast you reacted coming out of this fugue state. And Anubis hops back to join Azrael by his side, and the two of them just stare the both of you down. The air is tense. Combat is on the horizon. And it'll only end when only one party is left standing. We're gonna cut over to the police station. Aisha and Eugene. As the group of you are still conversing about what you're gonna do when the time eventually comes, one of the phones in the police station starts to ring. And then another. And then another. Samuel raises an eyebrow rather curiously and then goes over to one of the phones and answers it. He listens for a brief moment, pulls out a notebook, writes down some stuff, has a rather surprised look on his face, puts down the phone, goes to another ringing phone, picks it up, and you can see him sort of visibly pale as he puts down the other phone and he says to the two of you, "Not to alarm you or anything, but I think there's something going on at the hospital." Those were 2 911 calls from hospital staff and patients reporting some sort of violence going on in the main lobby.
Well, I think that's our cue to go.
Officer Langley, I have a strange request to make.
Sam turns to you and kind of raises an eyebrow.
For reasons that I can't really fully get into. What am I talking about? You guys know everything. I can go places in my dreams and actually show up there. So if you quickly take me to some super secure cell, I mean, we're in a police station. If you lock me in there, hopefully with the key, that would be nice. I think I can do a lot more good if I'm here and there at the same time.
You can fight like that?
Eugene gets a smile across his face, and he gestures to the bow. It's magic, remember?
Okay. I mean, you know, honestly, that sounds good to me.
All right. Eugene looks to Samuel.
Samuel kind of takes his hat off his head for a moment, kind of scratches the back of his head, and he says, "Well, I mean, as long as we're not left empty-handed here, considering what Aisha just told us, I'm willing to bet these, whatever these guys are, they're gonna come for Susan and Kim here too. So we still need to protect them as best as we can. I can throw you into one of the holding cells in the back of the station, but that's about as safe as it can get here."
That's fine with me. Well, if we need, are you saying we need to batten down the hatches here? Would it be better for Aisha and I to stay here, or should we head to the hospital?
I think it'd be better for the two of you to stay here, at least until we deal with whoever's coming.
So, as much as I would love to help at the hospital, I think that's probably not the smartest idea. In that case, I still think it would be best for me to be in a cell, maybe with a walkie-talkie. I know that sounds silly, but promise me. But trust me, I promise it's for the better.
Samuel runs a hand through his hair, kind of shrugs, and then he says, "Oh, okay, suit yourself, dude. Follow me. I'll take you to one of the holding cells. I'll lock you in there, but give you the key so that, you know, you can get yourself out and stuff like that."
Thank you very much.
Samuel leads you into the back of the police station where there are indeed holding cells. There's 2 of them. He gestures for you to walk into the whichever one you choose. And then when you do so, he closes the door behind you, makes sure it's locked, and then pulls a keyring from his belt and hands it to you through the bars. And he says, "Just be careful, kid."
Eugene smiles. He says, "I'll be with you in a moment." Yeah. And Eugene just sort of chuckles to himself. "Never thought I'd be glad to be on the inside of one of these."
Aisha, what's your vigilance at?
Okay, let's do that. Okay, yeah. So I believe, does sensory field increase vigilance? I don't think so. Okay, excellent, excellent. So I'm activating that for sure. So, and since I have rank A awareness, I'll do an active vigilance roll and got a -1, so I'll just take what I got.
Actually, I'm gonna stop you there, Aisha. Because as we so carefully pointed out, stealth cannot succeed against you in your area. The moment you put up your sensory field, there's someone right next to you. Give me a melee defense.
Oh, fuck. Okay, Jesus Christ. Okay, so I'm gonna have mastery A, a sensory field activate against this invisible assailant. So I get +1 to my ability, bonus of evading. And I'm going to... So this is before combat, so I can roll for this, yeah?
Yep.
Okay, that's a +1 on the dice. And evade, can I also spend mental strain for evade?
Yes.
So I'm going to spend 1 to make it a 6.
Cool. You succeed. As you instinctively step back 1 step and feel an incredibly razor-sharp blade swipe through the air in front of you and just shave off a few strands of hair from your fringe. Roll for initiative.
Okay. All right, that's -1, so I'm at 6.
So my initiative bonus is a 9. I got a -1 on the dice. Yeah, so that's an 8.
All right. Aisha, as you feel this attempted attack just barely miss you, the figure in the center of the room, you realize, probably had been standing there for a while you were talking, you didn't even notice. They are a bald man who has covered the entirety of his head and neck in black face paint, except for his face, where there is a white skull painted on it in white face paint, with the eyes dripping some sort of black paint. You can tell that this person must have painted it on that way. And you recognize this person as another member of Hades, specifically one of their better stealth agents. This is Charon.
Oh boy.
Eugene, however, it is your turn.
So Eugene can, I'm hoping, can hear this and sort of triangulate in his head where this is going on.
Oh, you didn't hear anything.
Oh, in that case... I mean, Eugene, in that case, if he doesn't know combat is happening, oh god, would he wait?
Wait, isn't he in the same room as me?
No, I'm in the holding cell, remember?
Oh, that's right, you're in the cell!
Yeah,
fuck.
They don't know.
Oh no!
I didn't expect a stealth attack, I guess I should have.
Oh fuck.
So, I'm gonna generate interrupt initiative. I'm gonna delay. I'm spending 8 to get 4, because, again... Eugene probably would wait a little longer, but he doesn't, or not wait, he would wait less, but he doesn't know there's danger. So he's just chilling. he's checking his Twitter.
Okay, you do that. You spend your time waiting on the phone. Unfortunately, it's Karen's turn. Aisha, the man in front of you snarls as he switches his knife from one hand to another. Susan and Kim scream as they suddenly realize that there's been an angry man standing next to them this whole time. This man looks at you, Aisha. He recognizes you as a threat, but you see him hesitate just for a brief moment, and then he turns to Susan and Kim.
Oh, bitch. Pussy ass bitch.
Kim screams in fear, which is briefly stopped as Susan, her mother, stands in front of her protectively, as Charon goes in and doesn't drive a knife through her, but he grabs her, struggling, and bites into her neck.
Hey, DJ.
What?
Can I interrupt?
Of course you can.
As soon as Eugene hears the scream, what we would see from the outside is he just crumples to the ground. I think because the police station isn't that big, he can kind of triangulate from the sound of it where generally this is happening.
Yes, it's coming from the main room that you were just in.
Mm-hmm. And so he is going to use astral projection overload to project himself into the main room, which doesn't cost any initiative.
I see your stealth and raise you my counter stealth.
As soon as the scream is heard, Eugene is just standing there in a golden flowing robe with his bow and arrow trained on Charon, because he hasn't seen the second he sees Charon, and I think pretty easily deduces this is a bad guy from the fact that he's biting into a mother's neck. Question, since Eugene doesn't know where literally exactly this is, how far away am I?
If you're interposing yourself between Charon and his victim, he is literally within kissing distance of you.
Then in that case, Eugene interposes himself, and it won't give me a rush penalty if I just shoot off a point-blank shot into this guy's stomach.
No, it won't.
That's not called shot. That's just, like, the first thing I see.
Yeah, it's not a called shot. You're point-blank. You're just firing an arrow the moment you appear in front of him before he can sink his really ungodly long fangs into this woman's neck.
All right, is there a special condition for point-blank, or is it just a regular attack?
Well, okay, so you're using a bow at point-blank range, so I'm going to say you're at a minus one.
That's a fair point.
That's fair, I feel like.
That's understandable. All right, I'm going to make the attack. Oh, I'm so happy that this worked. Also, for the record, just so everyone knows, the reason that I'm allowed to use my bow while I'm astral projecting is because I have Strike Two Worlds. The bow, because it can strike the other plane, also exists in the other plane. Okay, so I've obviously got all of that activated. Cool. Oh, that's a bad... That is a minus two on the dice, but I will take my reroll, because I have rank five in the skill. That's a plus three!
Oh, thank God.
And I am going to... First off, mastery A and B are active. Sorry, I'm just so glad that worked. I'm going to sink the three temp strain I can in to bring that up to a... So with my range attack score is a four, adding in my... So that's a seven, minus one's a six, plus three is a nine.
Cool.
And with mastery A and B active and rank three active, I will remind you... I think we agreed on 4-2 for the damage.
Yeah, we did.
I will remind you that... With my Strike Two Worlds abilities, no armor or toughness applies to the damage that he takes if this hits. If this hits.
Oh, you bitch. Of course it hits. Why wouldn't it hit? So that is 6 degrees of success.
No!
Your bow damage is 4/2, so that goes up to 10/2. No armor, no toughness. And so... Aisha, what you see is that Charon grabs Susan and he's just about to bite out her neck when all of a sudden that young kid that you saw disappear into the back of the police station is standing between them, bow in hand, arrow knocked, drawn back fully, a golden arrow made out of light sinks into this guy's midsection and throws him back a good 4 or 5 feet into a filing cabinet.
Yeah, that's my actions for now.
All right, Aisha, it's your turn.
Is he still alive?
Barely. You can see him struggling to his feet, eyes wide underneath the face paint. You can tell that he was not expecting this at all, and he was completely unprepared for it.
Well, he's about to get fucking blasted. So I'm going to use rank two... force projection to absolutely blast this motherfucker. I'm gonna roll a discipline ranged attack. Flat. So I'm gonna reroll. That's a minus two, so fuck that. And then I'm going to spend... I'll spend two of my temporary discipline train to get it to a five.
Would you like to spend a strain to break the tie?
Abso-freaking-lutely.
All right.
I'd love to. I'll spend my last temporary strain of discipline.
So you deal 5/5 physical damage. Describe how you kill Charon.
So Aisha just watched as this child, or not child, I shouldn't say this, this young man appeared in front of Susan and shot this guy back. And as Charon gets up to his feet, Aisha will just move forward with her hand out and just, he's just crushed against the wall.
And as you step forward, arm outstretched, palm out, you crush Charon under a wave of telekinetic force. He goes from bleeding and stumbling against this filing cabinet to flying across the room, and he plows into the opposite wall and goes through the wall and is summarily turned into a fine red paste, coating the broken linoleum and tile flooring. All right. Aisha, as you do this, you see Sam come out of the back of the police station. He's got his gun drawn, and he's looking around to see what's going on. He sees just this giant red stain and a hole in the wall. He squints at you for a brief moment, but then he sees something past you, levels his gun out the window, and fires off a series of shots. The glass window to your left, Aisha, shatters underneath the force of these concussive pistol shots. And Eugene and Aisha, you see that there is a red-headed woman outside in the parking lot that was just about to level her arm at your head, Aisha, but is forced back behind the car that she came in due to Sam just pelting her with 9mm. Aisha, you recognize the woman from the brief glimpse you got of her before she ducked back behind cover, and you recognize it as Charon's backup in case things go awry. Her name is Ishtab. Unfortunately, it's her turn. So, Aisha, you see ever so briefly Ishtab's eyes poke out from the corner of the car that she's hiding behind. You don't quite know what happens, but then you hear Susan go, "Kim? Kim, honey, Kim, where are you going?" You turn to look, and you see Kim has this glazed expression on her face, and she's slowly, without paying heed to anyone or anything, walking towards the broken window. And you can see that from behind the car, you can see that Ishtab is slowly, carefully gesturing with her hand as if to say, "Come here, come here."
Sorry, what step of initiative are we at, can I ask?
4.
Do you still have any interrupt?
I still have 2 interrupt. Question, so we can see her beckoning. Does she currently count as behind cover?
Yes.
Question, for interrupt initiative, can I wait until the end of the round?
You can interrupt me whenever.
Okay, cool. Because I don't want to lose my interrupt initiative at the end of the round, so just let me know when we're reaching that. Because Eugene's thought is, again, if I try to aim, I know I'm going to overspend. So I'm just at least waiting until she's somewhat out of cover.
Okay. Aisha, it's your turn, and you're acting along with Sam.
Okay, so I would like to do, I don't know what this would be, but I would like to essentially run over to Kim and stop her movement and shield her, either, if it's possible, move her away, prevent her from continuing walking forward and move her away. Or if I can't move her away, to shield her with my body in case she does get shot on.
Okay, that would be a minor move, which costs you 1 initiative. You run over to Kim. She is just walking through all of the broken glass from the window, paying you no mind. And as you grab her, she just is continuing to walk against you. But she's a, well, 6-year-old girl, so she's not really doing much.
Can I interpose myself in between? Like,
You are standing in between Kim and Ishtab.
That's all I need to do, because we're not having child death here.
Samuel, seeing you move to shield Kim from whatever it is that's going on, he makes a minor move to occupy the same space that you were just in. So now he's standing pretty much like right next to you, Aisha. And he's going to fire off another series of shots to keep you. Watch as Sam fires off a volley of 9mm at the car that Ishtab is hiding behind. And you can see something hit her. Her hand sort of reflexively jerks away from the open air where she'd been gesturing at Kim. So you see her hand just vanish behind the cover of the car that she's hiding behind, but you don't see much else. Aisha, it's your turn again.
Okay, I would like to basically pick up Kim and move her away.
All right, where are you moving her to?
Because Susan's still right in the room. She hasn't like ran away. Well, I guess she's worried because Kim's about to get killed or something. Susan's still in the room, correct? Is there any nearby area where I can quickly put her where she would be ideally behind, like, even a door? So that way I could do something to prevent her from continuing to move forward. But if nothing else, cover, so that way she can't get shot at.
You can move over to Samuel's office. It is a room just off to the side. You can sprint there, throw her in the room, and lock the door.
Okay, I will do that.
All right, make me an athletics check with speed, please.
All right, activating rank 2 of telekinetically enhanced movement, bringing me down to 69 humanity. Nice! That would give me plus 3 to athletics. So let me just roll, and that's a flat. And that means I'll use my reroll. Okay, that's plus 1. So that is plus 3, plus 4, so that's 7. There we go.
All right, so you spend the minimum amount of initiative, which is 2, so that drops you down to 1. You just disappear into Samuel's office. You throw open the door, you stick Kim on his chair, and then go out of the room and lock the door. And you can see that although she is still looking very dazed and out of it, she's no longer moving. She's just sitting in the chair, kind of out of it. Now it's her turn. Okay, so you don't quite see what happens, but you hear the dull, quiet cough that you recognize as an arm cannon.
I would love to interrupt this as she exits cover to shoot.
Oh, she's not exiting cover.
Ah, dang it.
And you don't quite know what exactly happened, but you know the shots came from the car somewhere. And you see Samuel stagger backwards a few steps, but he grits his teeth and he appears to be fine, strangely enough. And Eugene, you see 2 thumb-sized projectiles flattened and splattered against something solid, just sort of hanging in front of Samuel's face as they then drop to the floor.
What?
All right. Aisha, it is your turn, and you are all on the same cell. Well, save for Eugene, who is waiting in the wings with Interrupt Initiative.
Well, in that case, is she within range for an attack, even if she isn't in cover?
Yeah, she is.
Or hold on. Actually, forget that. I have other abilities. Okay, if they're behind cover, does that mean they're not in line of sight?
You roughly know the position that she's in from where you saw her just now. You don't know if she's moved out from behind that piece of cover, the car, but you know that that was where you last saw her.
Okay, so that means I am going to... So she is going to be going?
Yeah, she's on your same cell. So if you use gravity, you're going to have to roll me a discipline check with focus against my endurance with vitality.
Okay, yes, I will do that then. So I overspanned by 1. Oh, I forgot that this also uses discipline. Probably should have saved my reroll. Okay, that's fine though. Okay, I'm spending 2 to get to a 7.
All right, you pass. So what does this look like?
I think Aisha concentrates on the area where Ishtoff is taking cover. And I don't think there's like a kind of like buzzing in the air. And nothing changes around us. However, I think there is like a noticeable like sound of like something pressing down. And I don't know if it's really that visual. I think it's mostly just like the gravity increases, so it would be more visible when Ishtop actually makes a move that she is being forcibly like inhibited.
All right.
So she's at minus 2 to all physical actions, and since I have Mastery B, she's actually at minus 3.
Unfortunately, it's Ishtop's turn. You can see that she has a hand now on the hood of the car, and that's where she's hiding behind. She's struggling to stand up, but she's pushing against an unseen force as she braces her gun arm on top of the hood and tries to shoot at someone, something in her line of sight.
Yes, exactly. I will interrupt that. And I'm going to shoot from the hip, and I'm just going to make... Should I try to do a called shot to the gun arm? It sounds so cool, but I'm worried it'll mess me up.
Whatever floats your boat, man. This is your go.
Because the thing is, I can't aim. Can you do a called shot without aiming?
Yes, you can. You'll just suffer a -2 penalty.
All right, well, -3 cumulative, right?
Yes.
You know what? I like those odds. If I mess it up, I mess it up. But this seems fun. And so, yeah, I'm going to attempt to shoot her right in the gun arm because that Eugene has been emboldened. He thinks now he's super cool. So I'm going to roll the attack.
Yep, at a -3. Give me the whammy.
That is a +1 on the dice. I am going to obviously spend the 3 mental strain that I can on this. Sorry, you know, there it is. 3 mental strain to bring my total up to an 8 -3 for a 5. I think now is as good a time as any to invoke my bond to the bow itself. And that's what, an extra D3?
Yes.
Let me roll that. It's only a 1. Question, would my principle, none of this matters, apply? Meaning this all feels like a dream. This all feels like just a dream.
Sure, I will allow it, and I will allow you to double invoke 2 of your motivations.
Thank you. This seems like the time. That's a 2. So I've basically countered the penalty, and that has brought me up to an 8.
You get 5 degrees of success.
No!
Because she's at a -3 to... attempting to do anything.
Yeah, she's gravity. Gravity is good.
Mm-hmm.
So you are dealing 9/2 physical damage. All right. What happens is, Aisha, you see Eugene knock another arrow in his bow. He lets fly, and the arrow sinks into Ishtab's wrist, and she just grunts in pain as opposed to screaming. And she doesn't attempt to return fire. Instead, she looks at the scene and the situation, and then she disappears back behind the car. Annie and Rion, roll me initiative again.
Oh man, back to this freaking combat.
Back to this hacking combat.
Let's hope that somewhere we feel so motivated that they won their fight that we're going to do good on ours.
Coming in with a 6.
This fight's not gonna go well. I'm so sorry. That's a -3 on the dice.
Oh no.
It's okay. Though I would point out, you can burn that momentum more for free initiative.
No, there are better things I can use it for. I know it.
This is also true.
I thought she did.
So that puts my initiative at a 4. Big sad. Oh wait, no, it's 3 because I've been dead.
Anubis goes first. He sees the 2 of you now ready for battle, and he just charges right in, aiming for Rion once again with the claws. Rion, set me a melee defense.
Oi. A hacking 4.
So that's 2 degrees of failure. You are taking 6/4 physical damage.
To spend another free humanity, so I'll spend that primal instinct I gained. And 2 humanity to double my resistance again. Thanks, collapsible armor.
And all of that damage goes away as you turn to one side and use your shoulder to essentially ward off the incoming attack by stepping into Anubis's guard so that instead of him clawing you, his arm just sort of thumps onto your shoulder. All right, it's Azrael's turn. Annie.
Uh-huh.
I'd like you to make me a discipline with focus or stability with willpower check as Azrael raises his hand at you.
Ugh, not again. All right. I'm going to do... My dice have been mean to me. Okay, flat on the dice. And I've got my 3 focus. I don't have any more mental strain to spend. So it's just 3.
Well, you fail.
Yeah.
You are taking 6/4 clarity damage. And I need you to roll me against daze.
Dang it. All right.
At a -1 as well, because the damage is quite high.
With that -1 penalty, I'm then at a -4.
Oh boy, so you are heavily dazed. So, you are stunned. You may not use skill features on your next three checks or passive attribute values. You lose 3 initiative, which means you're out of this initiative this round. Holy shit.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
And you suffer a -1 situational penalty to your next initiative check.
Okay, and you said no skills for how many turns?
Not how many turns, just your next 3 checks. So pretty much like 3 turns. Rion, it's your turn. What do you do?
Oh boy. Gotta dig deep.
Annie is out of it. You can see that next to you, she has dropped to a knee, and she appears to be struggling with something, some sort of mental fugue.
Yeah, I need to solve this werewolf problem right back and now. On the other hand, I can make a mad dash lunge for goggles there. I'm thinking the mad dash lunge for goggles is probably a good idea. Let's go with melee attack.
All right. Are you charging at Azrael?
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
Hell yeah. Roll me that athletics check with speed, please.
Okay. All right. We got a flat on the die. Oh, wait. Savagery does thing. So we're coming at it with a 6.
Okay. You take 2 initiative to charge over to Azrael. So now I'd like you to make me that melee attack at -1.
Okay. Hello, Chorus. Okay. So, coming at that with an 8.
That is 4 degrees of success. Your claws are 4/4, correct?
Yep.
So you're doing 8/4 physical damage to this guy.
Yay! Plus an exploding die for vitality. +2.
So, 10/4.
Yep, boy howdy.
Ouch. You sink your claws into Azrael's chest, and there comes a spurt of thick blood from the vents in the gas mask as Azrael coughs in pain from just the sheer amount of damage you've done to him. Unfortunately, it's Anubis's turn.
Yep.
Anubis, seeing all of this happening, there is a moment of hesitation where he looks between Annie, Rion, Azrael, his friend. You can see the glowing gold eyes underneath the lenses of his gas mask narrow. And instead of going for anyone, he stalks off into the hospital to find his prey.
Oh, you son of a...
It's Azrael's turn now. Rion, I'd like you to make me a discipline check or a stability check.
Let's see. We got a +1 on the die. So I'm coming at it with a whopping 4.
Would you like to spend a strain to break the tie?
Yes, I would like to spend one of my 2 remaining mental strain to win that fight.
All right, Rion, it's your turn.
On the one hand, I hate to leave Annie. On the other hand, I hate to leave a child to the tender mercies of Anubis more. I made a promise, damn it.
I understand. Keep your promise.
It's time to pull out that old favorite, rank 2 of Dead Travel for Fest with Mastery B.
Okay, I don't need you to roll anything. Annie, you watch as Rion withdraws his claws from within Azrael's chest and then is gone in the blink of an eye. I am taking you out of combat, Rion, just for now.
Okay.
Annie, as you stagger to your feet, Azrael has sunk down to his knees, and you can see that past the tactical vest he's wearing, his chest is just gushing blood. You can tell that Rion's claws probably nicked something very important in there somewhere. Combat is now over. Annie, you stagger back to your feet, your mind reeling from the severity of everything that you've been hit by. And Azrael is kneeling there, just staring at you, too weak to move.
All right. Going to approach him in the staggered fashion until I'm right in front of him, arms is distance away, and I'll crouch down to come face to face, or face to mask, I should say, with this man. I feel like the conviction is still not quite there as an effect of the days, and she'll look into those lenses. You know, it isn't too late to change sides, like he did. I can still save you.
Hope is a lie, a fever dream, bought by those too weak, without the conviction to do what must be done. End me. I'm not going to fall for your lies.
That is truly a shame. And then she will pull her 45 and end him as humanely as possible.
And so you shoot him between the eyes.
I sure do.
He falls down to the floor in a crumpled heap. And as the adrenaline slowly leaves your system, you can hear there's a dog barking somewhere in the parking lot. You look outside and you can see Max just scrabbling at the windows of your squad car. He wants out.
Oh, my boy.
He wants to help.
Oh, my boy. I can't send him after a werewolf.
You have a perfectly good werewolf for that.
Meanwhile, back at the police station, I would like an awareness check from Aisha and Eugene, please.
Absolutely.
All right. So sensory field gives me a plus one. So that's going to give me a 5.
Gosh, this character just has managed to find himself in a very lucky situation for him. My awareness is at a 10.
Jesus fucking Christ.
What? What?
Astral projection rank 3 grants plus 1 to vigilance. I got a plus 2 on the dice, and because I have rank 5 in awareness, I put 3 temp strain.
What the fuck?
You both notice that Ishtab is still hiding behind the car. Aisha, your sensory field picks up her position. She is leaning against the wheel of the car, and she's trying to fiddle with her arm. Eugene, you get roughly the same deal as you're searching around, and because you're in your astral projection form, you see a lot of the innate magic that is in the surrounding area, like a fog or auras distinctly, and you can see a roughly human-shaped aura just hiding behind the car.
All right, I know where she is. Question, do I think, and obviously we haven't rolled initiative for the next round, do I think I could shoot through the car?
I don't know. Could you? You want to find out?
I would love to find out.
All right, then. Make me a ranged attack with your bow.
Oh, okay, cool. Sorry, I thought we were going to have to roll initiative first. That is another plus 2. And so with my ranged attack, that brings me up to a 7. So no, a 6. My last 3 mental strain into this to bring that up to a 10. And I already used two motivation, so I'm not going to try to use another.
Describe how your attack goes as you end this woman's life.
Eugene knocks an arrow, and he mumbles to the bow and to Aisha a little bit. This, I'm sorry, this isn't very sporting. And as he lets the bolt of light go, I think what it actually is that as it travels, it's actually phasing in and out of the physical plane. So it doesn't, the glass is already broken, but it doesn't actually touch the car. It only becomes physical as it passes through the head of Ishtab. All we hear is just a gurgle and a slump.
There is a crunch like someone breaking bamboo, a splatter of blood from behind the car, and then you both see Ishtab's form slumped to one side out onto the asphalt, a gaping hole in the back of her skull.
Eugene turns to Aisha. What happens now?
Well, now we try and make sure there's no one else coming, and hopefully, if they're not already dealt with, assist our friends at the hospital.
Thank you for letting me help. I'm sorry, I still don't fully understand. Who are these guys? What just happened here? Oh, and wait, and then Eugene turns to Samuel, remembering that he's there.
Samuel is just standing there. He's got his hat in one hand as he's fanning himself with it, and he's staring at you, this golden boy, and he says, "You okay, kid?"
Why wouldn't? I mean, I'm a little tired, but other than that, why wouldn't I be?
All right, well, I hate to put this on you, but you said you could get to the hospital really fast, right?
It might be a bit difficult. I haven't been there before, but absolutely. I'm sorry. It might be a bit more difficult because I haven't been there before, but if you tell me about the place, I'd be happy to try.
All right, well, you're looking for like a squat 3-story structure, kind of gray, kind of brown, in the center of town. If you were just driving by, you might have driven past it already. It's got a very typical ER entrance, you know, like the balcony and everything. You should be able to find it. I'm going to take Aisha here. We're going to drive to the hospital. If you can't get there before us, check on Annie and check on Aisha's friend. See whether they're doing okay and see if they need help. And if they do need help, help them.
Who's Annie?
Oh, my friend, the woman cop.
Okay, okay, cool.
Samuel, is Susan and him going to be safe here just with him astral projecting?
Well, as far as I know, if there's danger here, all Eugene has to do is wake up, right?
I mean...
Actually, yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good suggestion, Aisha. Let me fix that. And you see Samuel sort of hold his head out to one side, and then he says, "All right, Dolly, you're on guard duty for today." And the hat unfolds itself and turns into a Belgian Malinois, robotic in nature, almost mechanical in a way. He pats the head of the dog, and the dog in return gives him a little bark, and then stands next to Kim and Susan.
The secret third contender for goodest boy.
I think Eugene's like, "Who are you? Is that a transformer?"
Sam looks at you and he says, "Close enough."
All right, well, robot dog, please protect these people.
Arf, arf.
We need to get to the hospital.
Sam nods to you, Aisha, and he says, "Let's go. We'll take my car."
I can roll the ability check to teleport myself there. All right. So that's going to be a focus check against a D6. That is a plus one on the die. I fail by, because my focus is only a four, I fail by one, but that just means use one humanity to do it.
All right. Cutting back to the hospital. Rion, I would like you to make me an athletics check with speed, please.
Well, both.
Annie, I'd like you to make me an investigation check with your cognition.
Oh, thank God. Oh, wait, I'm leaving Max behind. He's normally who I use for this, but I'm not bringing him to fight a werewolf. I refuse. At least my investigation's good. Sheesh.
I will pump my last physical strain into this and come at it with a 9.
Oh, boy.
Now that I'm out of combat, of course, I have a +3 on the dice, and with my focus, that brings me to a 6.
All right. Rion, you are on Anubis's heels. You have sniffed out this guy's whereabouts, and you're catching up to him at an incredible rate of speed. You can sense and hear Anubis just about a minute, maybe less, ahead of you, just tromping through the halls, running at superhuman speed, following the scent of his prey, which you know to be the boy, the young boy that is lying in emergency surgery somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as you round a corner, you see Anubis about a good 10 feet down the hall in front of you. He is running towards what appears to be the doorway to the operating room, and you're right behind him. What do you do?
Charge.
All right, roll me that melee attack at -1.
Well, we're going to invoke for the dead travel fast with mastery B, because it gives a bonus to this nonsense. Well, I'm not here, so that venue is not available to me. I was aware of it. My brain simply has the fog. All right, we got a 1 on the dice. +3 gives me a 4. We're coming at it with an 8.
That is 4 degrees of success.
Woo!
You're doing another 8/4 as you bodily tackle Anubis from behind. You just blitz over to him, running leap, claws out, and you sink your claws into his back, and your momentum sends you both tumbling to the floor in a heap. Annie, you know that your erstwhile temporary teammate Rion was injured in the previous fight, although you're also the worse for wear. He was hurt physically, and so he was bleeding. And so when you enter the lobby of the hospital, you look for the only blood trail that is leading away from the scene and follow it. And as you catch up with Rion and Anubis, you see Rion just launch himself into Anubis's back, claws sinking into his shoulder blades, sending them tumbling to the floor in a heap of sharp teeth and claws and violence. What do you do?
Oh man, if they're a heap, I cannot use any kind of range attack because I refuse to hit Rion. But I am going to put myself between the kerfuffle and the door to the operating room and essentially just post up. Like, I'll still have my weapon drawn. Like, I'm using the gun now, but I'll have weapon drawn and guard the door and just be ready for when they separate, because that's when I'm going to make my shot.
All right. As they are busy tussling with each other, Annie, you slip past them and stand in front of the operating room doors. Your gun is drawn and pointed at the melee. Rion, one more shot here, buddy. Make me a might check with your vitality, please.
Good thing I got a plus three to that. All right. I want to burn the motivation. Life is precious for this. I'm pretty sure.
This check is to see if you can separate or pin Anubis in any way, shape, or form, separating yourself from your aggressor.
See what we get out of life is precious. One, plus five. We're coming at that with nine.
So, Rion, what does this look like?
What happens is somewhere in the tussle, he hears Annie's footsteps behind him and out of nowhere wraps one of Anubis's arms, digs his claws into his shoulder, rolls to the side, and forces Anubis up.
Annie, you see this happen. Make me that ranged attack.
Oh, hell yeah. We might just be a good team after all.
Tuner and Hooch, but with werewolf.
Three. God bless. No, it's flat. Actually, wait. No. Three is a flat, so it's a plus one on the dice. And then I've got my attack. And then I've got, so that's a plus two, so that's a three. And then I'm going to use the temporary strain that I wasn't able to use earlier to bring it to a six.
That's what that was more important for. Go figure.
Describe how you kill Anubis.
So he's being forced up, yes?
Yep.
So when you say up, is he like up in a standing position or is he actually more vertical? Or not vertical, horizontal?
Rion has rolled to his back, trapped one of his arms, and forced his torso up so his head's presented.
Oh, I see. Okay, if that is the case, like, he cannot move, he cannot defend himself, so we're gonna do this the humane way, right between the eyes.
I'm gonna get a face full of brains.
There's been worse, and it's not the first time Annie's done it.
You sink two 45 ACP rounds into this man's face. The gas mask shatters as his brains exit the back of his skull and onto his back and also Rion's chest, and the werewolf slumps over, dead, in a pool of his own blood.
Rion shoves the corpse to the side, sits up, hoodie in tatters. Well, I hope the cavalry did that better than we did.
We can hope, and then she'll offer a hand to help him up.
Rion downshifts because he doesn't want to claw in. I tell you, I keep going through hoodies like this.
Eugene, you appear outside of the Beaver Town Hospital. And in the main lobby, you see a scene of carnage. There's just blood all over the floor. There appears to be half a man splattered on the tiles. There's another dude with black armor on, a black gas mask that is also slumped on the floor, doesn't appear to be breathing. And as you're floating there in your golden robe with your bow, you see that woman police officer from before emerge with the man that you recognize was in the back of the van when you astrally projected there just earlier in the day. They both look like shit.
And Eugene, who is totally unharmed, gives a friendly wave and says, "Hey, are you Annie?"
Annie and Rion, you see this, like, 20-something dude with, like, a bow in a golden robe just sort of floating in the air in front of you all of a sudden. It's kind of weird.
I take it you're the cavalry, then.
Annie's gonna take a second and blink and just look at him. Just gonna lean towards Rion. Am I short-circuiting, or is that an angel?
If you are, I am too, and as I understand it fully, a doubt has been disproven for some decades now.
That's really nice of you to say. I'm the cavalry. I'm Eugene. You're, and he points to Rion, you're Aisha's friend, right?
Rion, pleased to meet you.
The pleasure. Samuel and Aisha are on the way, and I could get here a bit quicker. Is everything okay? There's a lot of dead people in there. Do we need to deal with that?
It very nearly wasn't. I think the only major we need to deal with is this fellow here. Kicks the corpse.
I'm sorry. I can't really do anything about that.
That I can manage. I think those are the majors. I think we've been played off as crazed gunmen.
I gotta say, I'm having a really weird vacation. I think I saw a hat turn into a dog. I think I saw that. That was weird.
You do realize that's the same situation for us, right? This instance.
What do you mean?
Well, it's not every day a golden youth in robe appears before you striding aloft with a bow.
Oh, right. Sorry. Yeah, no, I just can kind of go places in my dreams.
That is fascinating.
Thanks. How are you guys? Was it? I mean, I hesitate to say it, but you kicked some ass.
Heroin. This was down and dirty fighting worthy of a bayou bar, but I don't think anybody's going to be singing any songs about this one.
I don't know. Annie's still kind of processing. She took a lot of a mental beating. So it's just kind of a dead stare. Like, you can probably, if he has this kind of vision, can see the little like ticks in her eye, trying to process visually what's going on.
It's like the bottom of her eye, like one of her eyes is just twitching.
Yeah. Sorry if I'm kind of freaking you out. I would appear differently, but my body is it's in a holding cell back at the police station. And the woman and the girl are totally safe. The hat dog is watching over them.
Oh, glad to hear. Although, Miss Anne, I do believe I owe the police department one pair of handcuffs.
I believe we can work with that. I think I owe you a trip back down to Dr. Nguyen. You're not looking so good.
No, I am not. I am in one piece, fortunately. Alas, my wardrobe, I am afraid, will never recover.
It is at this point that the police car shows up. And Annie, you see that Sam is behind the wheel, curiously missing his hat. Aisha is in the passenger seat. The both of them get out. He kind of jogs over to you, sees that you look like shit. Rion looks like shit. And he says, well, judging by that, like, dude on the floor there, I assume your problem's taken care of?
For the most part, sir. Sorry, I'm not in it.
Rion dragging the corpse of Anubis to Dr. Queen or Dr. Rose.
I think when Aisha sees Rion, she immediately like runs over to him and is like, what happened to you? And then looks and sees Anubis and is like, oh.
Werewolf duel?
Yeah, okay. Well, Jesus, are you still up? Okay, we got doctors here. This is a hospital.
Yeah. Best we get Anubis out of sight, though.
Okay, listen, me and the cop can take care of that.
Sit down, Rion. Do I get treats?
Aisha just rolls her fucking eyes, because he's done this so many times.
And he's still out of it. She's gonna look at him. You eat treats? I have some. And she'll reach into her pocket, pull out the treats she keeps for Max, and presents them.
And all four of you can hear the barking of a German Shepherd somewhere in the vicinity. And your attention is drawn to the German Shepherd in the back of Annie's car.
I'd accept, but I think Max will hold a grudge.
Okay. And she'll put them away.
So the group of you spend the next few days recuperating from your injuries and the ordeal that you went through. Over the course of the next week, you don't see any more retaliation come from Blacksteel. Life, as it is, resumes a sort of normal. The attacks were explained away as the kidnapping gone wrong, and the people that were clad in black were the kidnappers. They were swiftly neutralized by some concerned tourists from out of town, along with the local police. The loss of one of the nurses who worked at the hospital is mourned, along with the two police officers that were killed in the line of duty. Susan, Kim, and Charlie are safe. Charlie regains consciousness somewhere in the middle of the week. His injuries were not too terribly severe. Thanks to Rion's quick thinking and life-saving efforts, the boy will continue to live. And so we find ourselves in the Beaver Police Station once again. Annie, you have spent the last few days or so recovering from the mental assault that you underwent. Sam is ever present. His hat's back on his head. Aisha and Rion, your injuries have been tended to. Rion's got a bunch of bandages on his forearms. And the four of you are in the office space of the police station. Eugene, you returned to your motel room a while ago and have just been living life as per normal. Samuel bade you to stay just for a few more days because, well, this tete-a-tete needed to happen. Samuel sets his hat on the table nearby and he says, "Right, so now that all of that shit has been dealt with, we've got our cover story up, town seems to be returning to normal. I, on behalf of the Beaver Police and the town, really, would like to extend our thanks to the three of you, Aisha, Rion, and Eugene. Thank you for your help in dealing with this crisis, as it were. You are always welcome back in town. I'll make sure that if you ever stop by again, you are taken care of, not in that way, and you are safe here, as long as I'm working here, you know? Annie, good job. We made sure that your charges are safe. I think they're back at your house. Everything should be as per normal now, I hope. One question remains, though. If something like this happens again, can I count on all of you to come back to this town should I need of your assistance again?"
"In a heartbeat.
I mean, I'm not going anywhere."
Eugene is grinning ear to ear. "I will drop everything."
"You know better than try and get rid of me, Sergeant."
"No, I wasn't referring to you, Hanny." "Well, all right. By the power invested in me, although I don't really know whether that power is even coming back at this point. Eugene, Aisha, Rion, welcome to Orpheus. This has been Applied Materials, an Orpheus Protocol actual play podcast. A warm thanks to our players tonight. Dave for playing Eugene, Rasp for playing Rion, Vario for playing Aisha, Jenna for playing Annie. Be sure to follow the show at Applied Mats on Twitter, and we will return in the next episode. Good night. Time heals. Time provides. But Orpheus does not forget. The agents of the Applied Materials investigation have healed and trained. Now, they seek vengeance. Next time on Man in the Machine, Part 1.